Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come, and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahalastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hi there. Welcome to my beautiful home here at the Bristol Old Vic. This is what we've been spending your Kickstarter money on. I mean, in a way, it was a waste of time. Not really. Welcome to another Rahalastapa. This one with the fantastic Russell Howard. And we're on tour at the moment. If you would like to come and see us, then look at richardherring.com/gigs or rahalastapa.co.uk/gigs. And you can find out where we're going and who's going to be on. We've got fantastic guests like Sarah Pascoe, Grayson Perry, Limmy. Fantastic people coming up. So do come along if you can. We've also got the Kickstarter going. It's getting close to the target. We really need more than the target if we're going to carry on filming all of these shows. And go to rahalastapa.co.uk/Kickstarter. The cameraman just bumped into a table and it made me laugh. That's all that's happening there. There's some fantastic rewards. We got these Trump cards that you can play a full game of Trumps with my favourite guests. Stickers, badges, T-shirts, the lot. It's going to be amazing. Please support us if you can, because if we don't hit that target, we get nothing. Now let's sit back, relax, and enjoy Rahalastapa with Russell Howard. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to King's Place. Please welcome a man who dresses like this all the time. I don't know what you're talking about. It's Richard Herring. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Love to be here. Thank you very much. Welcome to Richard Herring's Lessening Sexual Tension podcast. It's just trying to get... There's a lot of sexual tension in my podcast. I'm just trying to take it down notch by notch. Why have I started with this guy first? Oh, no. It's going to be full of sexual tension. He was asking me to kiss his ears backstage. We'll get on to that. Although I was hanging out at King's Cross Station... just now. I'm just in the queue to get my photo taken at platform 9 3/4. I love it. And a 35-year-old man in a Hogwarts scarf eating Bertie Bott's beans
told me he calls it Rehullastapa, so I don't know if that's going to catch on. It's a very poor... I actually went on TripAdvisor to see what people said about the... have you seen this platform, 9 3/4? It's there, there's a trolley. It's hilarious. I can see why people would queue up for 2 hours to get there. I went to TripAdvisor to look, see what people said about this. Now, A, you know, if you're going to go to that thing, don't go on TripAdvisor and admit that you've been there. But B, not really worth reviewing, is it? But someone said, this is a poor rendering of Platform 9 3/4. It's nowhere near Platform 9 or 10. And presumably when you run at it, you don't go through to a magical land either. Imagine going to that, going there and then writing about it. She'd come from America to see it. People queue up for 2 hours. Anyone been? Oh, idiots. Just go. It's £10 a photo, apparently, so don't go. But great to be back in London. Platform 9 of King's Cross Station is where Queen Boadicea is buried. So, you know, maybe go and look at that. That's all I would say. That's something actual, some real history. Go and try and find her. Dig her up, you'll make a fortune. So, it's good to be back in London. I've been out doing these gigs in the provinces, and it's not nice out there. So it's nice to be... I put on a brave face. I pretended I enjoyed it, but it was a very unpleasant experience for me. I'll tell you a few things that have been going on. I've had the locks changed at my house. Nothing bad's happened, but having that job done, realising the ease with which a locksmith can gain access to a locked house... makes me wonder if any other profession is so clearly demonstrates its own redundancy. I'm not sure it does. So I'm going to maybe ask that as an emergency question. Another emergency question I've got, coming off the back of Twitter really recently, is do you gradually become racist or do you wake up one morning and it's all in one go? That's the... seems a lot of older celebrities just... I hope it's all in one go, but it'd be a shame to sort of know that it's happening and... Looking forward to the day that I'm kicked off Twitter anyway. Hey, that might be all I've got for you now. I felt like I had loads more. Look, we've got a fantastic guest for you. If he has returned for it, he's going to get himself a Diet Coke. Hopefully he's got it in time. He was last on Rehullastapa. Did I do it before? Yeah, I did. He caught you in 2012. It was 7 years ago. I can't believe it's passed so quickly. He's grown up so quickly, this little boy. He's probably best known as the teacup sick boy. That's just what he was called at school. I must have done no research for him last time because I was surprised by so many things about him this time. So it's got a lot more professional, this podcast, in the last 7 years. Andy, you probably are here because you used to play for Basingstoke Town FC, and that is in midfield, and that is probably why you are here now. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Russell Howard!
Hello.
Come in, sit down.
Hello.
Could have dressed up, mate. Could have dressed up a bit.
You look absolutely delightful.
Could have dressed up a bit. That's what I'm saying.
You look like a football agent.
Thank you. I didn't know you were that good at football.
Yeah, I'm all right.
Yeah, but you played like... Is it semi-professional Basingstoke Town?
I played for Basingstoke Town Reserves.
Oh, did you?
So, nice, yeah. And I was incredibly proud of myself at the time. But, yeah, the more you think about it... I wasn't very good. I'm good.
Well, you were, 16 or something, were you?
So you could have progressed
onwards?
I'm the best comedian footballer in the world.
Yeah.
But that doesn't really mean anything. So we play football in Crystal Palace every Tuesday with all the comedians, and it's amazing. Like, Noel Fielding, very good.
Yeah.
And he doesn't look like you'd imagine he would sort of pick the ball up and start painting on it. do you know what I mean? And start, like, sort of swirling around. But he's a horrible footballer, isn't and it he? Makes me like him even more. He's really, like, put in, you know? There's no hint of baking cakes with him. He's a nasty, nasty thug. Omid Jalili, very good at football.
Yeah?
Yeah, sort of, you know, like a little disco potato. Daniel Kitson, very good at football. You've never played?
I've not played. I played once in... Melbourne, when the comedians were all playing together, I played then.
This sounds very weird.
It does, yeah. I wonder if it's going to settle, do you think?
I don't think so. I mean, listen, this isn't my game.
Yeah. We've gone for radio mics for the first time.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were worried about it.
And it... and it feels like it's sort of playing back.
Yeah.
And imagine if we have to repeat this gold.
Well, as long as everyone else is happy, it might just sound weird up here because there might be... sometimes there's fold back on the stage, isn't there?
Yeah.
Does it sound right where you are, or does it sound weird?
That lady says it was weird. But that might just be the general vibe.
It's weird, because because I'm wearing a suit, isn't it? It's put you off.
Oh, I've just seen the inlay of that.
Yeah?
Look at that. Ooh. Why not? Is that...
It picks up the purple. There's a little bit of purple in there.
It really makes you look fantastic.
Thank you.
Your hair looks lovely.
Thank you.
Yeah. You're right to arm, Adam. But
I had
looks
a little
great.
Bit too much. I've got some hair gel just before I came on, but I squeezed a bit too much into my hand, and then I had to decide whether I was going to dispose of it or get it all in my hair.
I'm really glad you cleared that up.
And it all went in.
Because you came back into the green with sticky hands. And everyone's got a pre-show ritual. But I did, I thought, is he one of those guys? Because you look like you might be a pre-gig. And fair enough, you know?
I couldn't get that much out of it. I'm 52. It was, but it is very...
What are your pre-gig rituals? Do you have any?
I don't really have any, really. Do you? Yeah. Are you quite superstitious?
I have a thing, yeah, I sort of do this little weird movement. I have to touch a piece of wood, and I have to have a poo. Okay.
And because you've touched the wood, or because... Is that just...
No, it's just this weird thing I always have to touch. I mean, this gig's fantastic for me.
Yeah. you can just poo in the chair.
Exactly. Well, this is the... So Richard asked me before we started whether I'd ever shit myself in a gym.
Yeah.
And, most people say hello. And I hadn't. And you were surprised by that.
Yeah, very surprised. Mm.
And I didn't ask you whether you'd had a...
Well, I'm not saying whether I have or not. Oh. It was about whether you've had a shit in the shower. I'll tell you why I asked the question. Because I once did. Oh. I had diarrhea once in the gym. And
really?
Kind of thought... I think I thought I'd get away with it in the shower rather than it happened. And, you wee in the shower, obviously. That's a given.
Sure.
But I try,
you should point out, because the world's changed, you're weeing into your...
Yeah, yeah. Like,
you're not just sort of peeing into other showers.
No. And again, I can't get it over them. When I was six, I'd have been able to get it over into the next one. Mm. But now, very much, and maybe under. Sometimes a little gap underneath. I did a little poo. And even with diarrhea, it was quite hard to get down the... get down the old pipe thing.
Yep.
Yeah. No, I guess they didn't really design him for that. So, that's why I asked that question. What's the teacup sick boy? You did explain that to me backstage, because you brought it up yourself backstage.
So, I was... I brought it up. Nice. I was on a teacup ride. Do you know the teacup ride?
I do, yeah. I mean, it's the sort of week... My kids go on teacup rides.
Yeah, exactly. So
it's for 3 or 4 year olds.
For 3 or 4 year olds. And I was 12 years old. And what I should point out, I was on a high because I'd been wanked off for the first time.
Okay.
So I was exceptionally excited and I thought I could take on the world.
Yeah.
So I jumped onto this teacup with this kind of like post wanked off, look at me, everyone. And everyone else started spinning me around. And I threw up.
Yeah.
And everyone called me teacup. And forgot about the fact that I'd been wanked off. And, you know. But I was 12. It was amazing. It's like, I know there's a real air of, but, I mean...
It depends who wanked you off. It was the bloke who ran the ride.
Oh, sure.
Then this is a very different story.
The funny thing is, I'd have been glad of the attention. No, it was a young lady.
Yeah, good.
She was a year older than me. It was fantastic. And again, there's that weird tension, but I was 12. It was wonderful.
Yeah.
And it was ruined by me being sick on a fucking teacup.
Well, you were very exciting day for you.
It was brilliant until that moment, yeah. Fucking changed my diary entry that night.
I talked to your sister about you.
Oh, yeah?
She was on my podcast.
Yes. And I was really pleased because you were... What's that?
Someone's at my door at home. Do you want to see who it is?
I'd love to see who it is. That's the woman that whacked me off.
Is
that your house?
That's next door, then.
All right. I was going to say, lovely. Yeah. Does your house look like that?
It looks better than that.
Fabulous.
That's next door.
I mean, what we're going, woo, but someone made it into your house.
What someone is, someone has just walked past there.
Oh, is that what happens?
Yeah.
And it jingle jangles.
Yeah, I turned it off on my watch, but not on here. It's
nice.
It. Got a couple of emails.
Do you want to just check your wife in case she's getting trussed up, tied up to the radiator? It's going to be awkward.
She's at Pilates at the moment.
Fine, fuck it.
So it'll just be the babies. It'll be the babysitter who gets into trouble, so that's fine. Airplane mode, we should be okay.
Lovely.
I'll stick that down there.
So we haven't checked the sound and your phone sound.
It's going great. Yeah. It's going great in the new environment.
I'm loving this. Yeah, it's great. Yeah. So you spoke to my sister?
Yeah, and you bullied her quite badly, you and you...
It's because I'm her older brother, that's fine.
But also your younger brother, she's a twin, right?
Yes,
So you've got a brother...
So she's she's the middle one, technically.
Right. So she's the older twin, she got bullied
she's
by the
older twin.
And the older brother.
Not bullied, but
she used to shoot footballs at her head or something.
No, she went in goal. and, listen, you know, I like to ping him in. And, yeah, that was just... Like, why am I getting bullied for this? we should play football and kick the football out. We had a doll that we used to dunk in the toilet, and that was, you know, mean. But I love the fact that there's tension in the room, like, none of you were ever mean to your fucking siblings. I can't believe you did that. I would never do that. I used to knit with my sister. No, you know, we used to just... But we get on great now.
Yeah.
But when we were kids, we didn't really have a lot, because we had to muck out a rabbit, and it just drove me and my brother mental, because we hated this thing. And then the rabbit got myxomatosis, and Dad killed it with a hammer. In front of her. And
in front of her?
In front of her, in front of my brother and me, and it was hilarious. And it really was. It was just like, bloody hell, the animal's suffering, crack, like that. And even like age 9, I was like, I don't know if that's the way you're going to deal with it. But my dad's quite instinctive.
Yeah.
But it was like 3 twitches. I was like, how do you get a hammer that quick? It's like a West Country Thor. But yeah, so we had a fairly, you know, unpredictable family.
Yeah, well...
A fun family.
Yeah, which you've used
that paints my sister, my dad in a bad light. He wasn't just randomly killing animals. he was like, oh, he's suffering. Crack.
Yeah. It was a quick way to deal with it. Mm. You've done a lot of stuff where you've acted with your sister in the Last Christmas. With her, but that's presumably based on your family to some extent.
Yeah, it was... I wrote with Steve Williams, so it was a mixture of his story with his girlfriend and a bit of mine. And it was like my cousins and aunties all sort of blended together. And Kerry played my sister in it. And she was unbelievable. It was a really fascinating window when you kind of go, oh, wow, my little sister's a lot more talented than me. She was so good. It really...
We've all been trying to tell you. We've been meaning to let you know.
But it was really cool. So you sort of see her and you're like, bloody hell, she's properly brilliant.
Yeah.
So it was really lovely. And she was giving me like little tips because I'd never acted before. It was really great. It was cool.
Yeah, well, you were good in it.
I was
I did a similar thing where I played myself,
it's
going
hard,
back to my family.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when you're with exactly the same thing. When you're with the fantastic actors, it's suddenly,
Well, they're very good at being still.
Yeah.
And you realise that I'm a real fidget.
Yeah.
And I think you are too.
I am. And also, what I would do, I got cut on getting told off for, was looking at the person whose line it was about to be.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because I'd written it as well. I didn't know I was doing it.
Like a nativity play.
She didn't take me aside, the director. She just went, Richard, can you stop looking at the person who's about to talk before they say it?
What, were you, like, mouthing their lines?
I mean, almost effectively. I might have even been doing that, yeah.
Oh, nice.
So, but you it's nerve-wracking that you've written something,
it's very scary. Yeah.
So it's a very different, you know, it's amazing to get anything on TV, which you've been very successful at getting stuff on TV.
Yeah.
And what's quite interesting is so much as, you know, you were doing, I don't know if you must have started Good News in 2012, when you were last on.
2009, yeah. So we started in 2009.
Yeah, because I was there very early on, and then I got sacked for eating all the Haribo.
Do you know, the reason we didn't sack you, we just moved.
just moved off.
It's because you were too intimidating, truth. No, it was that thing of like, because it felt like having this kind of wise elder in the room, genuinely, and we were all embarrassed to
I was embarrassed
to
for
say,
you.
No, but genuinely. Do you know what I mean? It was a bit like, oh God, he's done too many things. So we kind of, we'd sort of wait for you to leave and then sort of say, this is what I was going to say, this is what I was going to say. We were just, it's oddly nervous around you.
It was the right decision. You've got a fantastic team working on that show. But like, so much has happened. You were doing this Good News show all the way through all this terrible news that's been going on in the world. But,
yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying it's your fault. But by looking on the bright side, so many people, wow, let's make things much worse. See if we can throw Howard off his game. But was it tricky to keep on... I mean, what I like about you is that positivity, and that's something that's sort of always been there in your act.
Yeah.
And that was presumably the idea behind this show, was to do a topical show that was looking at the good things rather than
And we ran out of them. and then, I don't know, it's just being younger and not being... I wasn't particularly engaged. And then the more the show goes on, and now the Sky show is a bit more kind of angry, I guess. And like my last stand-up, I wouldn't say, like, I quite like talking about things and still trying to be funny. I think that the real enemy of satire at the minute is a lot of clapter. Like, do you know what I mean? Whereas I think it's really important to try and be funny. Like, I did a whole thing about girls self-harming in my Netflix special, and it was really, you know, it was a big 15-minute chunk, and I was really proud of it, and it was talking about it seriously, but also there was funny bits in it. I find that more rewarding.
Yeah.
You know, the older I get, to try and talk about things that aren't easy. When I was younger, I just think, I'll just do that, because it's a little silly story, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but, yeah. Well, it is. I mean, you do great interviews on your show, and you have great guests on your show.
Yeah.
The one I watched today with Rob Delaney is extraordinary.
Yeah, isn't it?
I mean, you talked to Rob about the death of his two-three-year-old son that happened about a year before.
Yeah.
It's an incredibly moving interview, but you handle it so brilliantly as well.
Well, what was incredible about that is that he wanted to talk about it.
Yeah.
So he kind of said, I really want to use your show to talk about grief. And I was like, okay. And we spoke for like an hour, and right. it was unbelievable. And you realise the skill to interviewing is taking me like 10 years, is to listen.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But as a comic, you're like, me! You know. But when he was talking so frankly and with such poise on such a difficult thing, you become very aware that there'll be people at home listening that this will mean a huge amount to them, that a man talking very, very openly and honestly about grief in a way that people can connect with. So, in a sense, I didn't really do anything. I just kind of go out of the way and let him be eloquent.
Yeah, but that, as you say, that is an important part of it. But I think you got more out of him from the way you reacted to it, because it's you again were honest as well. The difficulty with those subjects is most people don't know, could never imagine. Well, you spend as a parent, you spend your whole life worrying about being in that situation, so you imagine it, but you know what you're imagining cannot be anything like the reality of it happening.
But the interesting thing with it is that there was a bit where he said, if somebody has suffered a bereavement, then talk to them about it. And what I said is that we, don't know this is a British thing, but you almost don't want to burden them with the pain. And then he said, not a burden. I'm thinking about it all the time, so just bring it up. And I think somebody talking like that probably helps people at home, because they may know somebody who's lost somebody, and you just don't know how to help them.
Yeah.
And if a guy going on telly talking about that does, it's kind of an amazing thing to do, you know?
Yeah, and it's nice to be able to do it within a show that's... I mean, there were some light-hearted bits in the interview itself, but obviously it's within a comedy show. I think it really is helpful to do those things.
Yeah, definitely.
It's on YouTube if you want to check it out. It's worth checking out. And you talked to... I saw one with Louis Theroux, which was very funny as well.
Yeah, he's great. John Ronson was fantastic talking about porn. Really interesting. He's a fascinating guy.
He is, yeah. Lovely. We've had them all on here.
Have you?
Yeah, we've had all of them. We have them first, didn't they? If they pass that test, they can go on to you.
Well, thank you very much.
I was going to say, you know, you're getting older, I'm getting older.
We are, yeah.
You're not. It's not going to last forever, you know, for you.
On my life?
Well, definitely your life.
Yeah, yeah. But it sounds like, what are you trying to off me tonight?
I've seen tonight as a bit sort of a Charlie in the Chocolate Factory opportunity, because your initials are RH as well.
Yes.
So I could, when I'm too old to do this and you're too old to do arena tours anymore.
Yes.
I could hand this on to... I'm just wondering if you want me to hand this on to you.
He's just... Are you suggesting a work swap?
Well, not a swap, because I don't want to do your hard work of touring around the country. I'll be dead, probably. I'll just retire.
And you want me to do this?
I thought I could give you, as a sort of Willy Wonka figure...
Yeah.
Gift you this podcast. Not right away. I've still got some years in me yet.
But and other people...
And that your career isn't over. When your career's over, what I'm saying...
Yeah.
And you can't get any work anywhere else. You can do this. It's what I did.
Okay.
And because your initials are RH, it would still work. Then they'd be happy, because they just like shouting Rahulastapa. That's the only reason they come.
Okay.
I mean, you don't have to take it. I'm just offering you the gift. That's all. It's like Charlie Bucket going, no, Willy Wonka, fuck off. I don't want your factory. I don't even
imagine
like...
if that had been in the original book. Fuck off, Wonka.
I don't even like chocolate. I like Cadbury's.
Slave labour. You don't pay any of them dwarves, you piece of shit.
Anyway, it's there. The offer's on the
That's
table.
Very, what a lovely offer. That was a, like a, someone having a breakdown on a bus then.
I did see
but I'm waiting because I'll die. And you'll get on too. You can take it. We've got the same name, you know.
It'd be an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much.
I think you're good as well. I think you're a good interviewer, so I think you could fill my big shoes.
Yeah.
Size 8 shoes. I've got 42 European.
Still on that bus stop, aren't we?
I saw you.
You're going to do a song with them?
I saw you.
Where's the 42?
I saw you somewhere saying you were 33. Someone's talking to you about doing big arena tours and all the work you're doing. So, I'm 35 now, so it must have been a while ago. And I'm 35, but when I'm 50, I wouldn't be able to do this anymore. Yeah. I think you will be able to do it when you're 50. So not fuck you.
Not arenas.
Yeah.
Nah.
Why not?
Because it's, I don't know.
Tell me about arenas. What is a gig? what's a gig like if there's more than 20 people there? Tell me the story.
Great. Yeah. They're really good fun. Yeah. I know you're not meant to say that, but they're brilliant. Yeah, they're really good fun. And, I remember seeing Chris Rock and Dave Chappelle in arenas and just going, wow, you can do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, they're great, man. They're just, they have to be finished. That's the only thing. If there's like 12,000 people, it has to be quite, you can't really kind of improvise.
No.
That's the only thing that you sort of creatively sort of stand still a bit because it's too much of a risk. But all the gigs leading up to it,
I've been in the audiences of some gigs of that size, Never been on stage. But it's something with some comedians, and I think like a lot of UK comedians, and it's interesting you pick American comedians there, because I think a lot of UK comedians maybe struggle with the concept in a way that... Because sometimes, when you lose a bit of an audience in a gig of 100 people, you don't really notice.
Yes.
But if you lose a section of 10,000 people, if they're distracted, you can... Like tell that they're there's a whole suddenly a whole section of the O2 becomes distracted by something.
Well, I did a gig at the Glasgow Arena and there was a fight.
Right.
Up in the gods, and you'd hear this like properly, fucking dear, fucking, fucking you, like both got fucking. Be away, fucking right. Like that. And I've never got more into the English. And I was like, what's going on? And there was a lady down the front that went, they're having a fight, just fucking crack on. And I was like, but I can't, and it's still going on. Yeah, I'll fucking kill your mother, you fucking like that. And it made the paper the next day. Right. It was like in the Daily Mirror that there'd been a fight. So that's definitely, can happen. I remember doing a gig in Eastleigh when a bloke started on me, and nobody's ever started on me in an arena.
Right.
But I was doing this 60-seater Jeff Whiting gig, and this guy just came up to me. I was like 19 at the time, and he goes, "You've been sleeping with my wife." I said, "I haven't been sleeping with anyone." That's why I'm doing this, Jesus.
I got wanked off when I was 12.
There's been nothing since. And he kind of swung at me, and nobody did anything. And I was stopped trying to carry on. I was trying to do a bit about Craig David's week. And, he met a girl on Monday, like that, and I was kind of running around, and this bloke was swinging at me. And then about sort of a minute later, because he was pushed out, a minute later, his wife just walked past. And I was like, you could have pointed out that we weren't having sex. She's like, yeah, I was enjoying it there. So the proof is you can have weird gigs.
Yeah.
I remember the oddest experience I had in an arena, I think for the audience, was at the O2, and I did a joke and I got it wrong. So I did spoonerism. I can't really, chicken, why did it? Like something like that. My brother was the only person, because he'd seen me do the joke properly. He knew that I'd cocked up. So I hear this... and I went... I genuinely shouted at him. I went from nowhere, fuck you. I will knock your teeth out with a brick, right? But these people didn't know that it was my brother. They'd just seen a man laugh at somebody at a comedy club and the comedian really not respond well. And then I explained that it was my brother, and they were like, still a bit weird, isn't it? But he was like I could see him in a box. with all of his mates and they're all drinking. I could just see him amongst the 50 pounds of my brothers like that, sort of swearing at me. It was his highlight. Nothing excites my brother more than me doing badly at a gig. He absolutely loves it, honestly. Just anyone doing badly. My brother has always found that. We did a gig at the Ashton Court Festival, and it's the most I've ever seen him laugh. There was a guy doing a routine about Celine Dion, and a man got up and started urinating on him. And he carried on doing the bit, and my brother was, honestly... Like, exactly, that's the correct response, but that poor man and... But my brother's like... He's got wee on him!
And I guess if 15,000 people are all laughing at the same joke or all, that must be an amazing
thing as well.
It's great.
Yeah, just like when you get it going, it's the same as any, like to be honest, a 200-seater, if you get jokes working, and like, because I'm working on my new show now, and if you can get things, I was at the Norwich Arts Centre, which is like 300, and it was so brilliant because you go, oh, yeah. And that's the drug, isn't it? I think once you've lost that, and I bet you everyone has it, from Connolly through to Dave Chappelle or I'm trying to think, Amy Schumer, whoever, it's that bit when you go, oh, man, that's going to work, that. And I think if you lose that, that's when you're no longer a comic. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? You know when you get in a show together and you're like, ah, that bit's really... And when you have your mates, like other comedians come in, those are the bits that you know they're really great because you want to do them in front of your mates.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
What is interesting is I haven't done stand-up for... I haven't written any stand-up, really, apart from the stuff I mess around here, which isn't really written, for like a year. So I finished my last tour in June last year. It's June now. And I'm not really missing it.
I think
any other time in the last... Because I came back in 2004. I came back and you were sort of just on your ascent, really, and I gigged with you quite a lot.
We gigged loads together, didn't we?
Yeah, weirdly, and it was, and you were amazing, and I remember coming back and going, oh, fucking hell, this guy, because you were making stuff up out of nowhere, and every gig was different material, it seemed. It was phenomenal. And so I was coming back sort of testing the water, and since then I've loved it, and every year I've come back and I've wanted to do another show, and sometimes I've repeated a show and had a bit of a...
Yeah.
But I've always been writing material, but...
You must have written so much.
Yeah.
Because it's so funny, you go, I haven't done stand-up. I haven't written new stand-up for a year. My stand-ups haven't written new stuff for 20 years,
no,
mate. Like, do you know what I mean? So it's that weird...
I know, well, you want it, but, I think I've heard you say this as well, but you want to keep going and you want to keep changing stuff, and I occasionally, if a show's really... I brought a few shows back just because I'd never recorded them.
Yeah.
And, and I also thought, like, 10, 15 years later, I might do these shows better.
Yes.
So I don't mind, I occasionally redo a show. But really, once you've done it for a year, I think I did Talking Cock for 2 years and it felt like too long.
Yeah.
So you want to move on and do the next thing. But it was quite, I thought I would miss it. I thought I'd be really... I think this obviously scratches the itch and I'm still on stage doing this. But
is that because you've got a young family as well?
Yeah, I mean, it's partly that.
And do you think you're just kind of... That presumably is fun, reading them bedtime stories.
Yeah.
Do you put all your stand-up energy into that?
Well, I do make up... Do you
make them applaud you into the
room? I know, my daughters are very
Dad,
tough...
You may recognise him from Little Red Riding Hood.
My daughter's a very tough audience, but she wants new stories. I make stories up for her every night, different stories. But usually she gets into a theme that she likes.
Yeah.
And the thing that I got into recently that I really regret getting into because it's very hard to do stories about is that she's got... She likes dollhouses. I've made up... Somehow I got into the story where she had a doll's house of every house in our village in her room, and at night time all the dolls came alive and were the people in the houses, and she's a sort of the god of the of the village, which she likes a bit too much, so she's definitely going to be a stand-up comedian. But also it's kind of a difficult story to do anything about because she's... All you're really doing is stories of people in a village, and then if you can think of a way of getting the big Phoebe to come in and pick something up, then that's really all there is. And she loves it, and I find it really hard to improvise any more stories about it.
I can't wait for that. My sister's got a 5-year-old, and they're living with my mum and dad at the minute. And dad, it turns out, has an amazing ability at inventing stories, but all of my dad's stories that he tells his 5-year-old boy are fictitious stories about me.
Right.
Doing terrible things.
Yeah.
So it's the time that I burnt all those people and the police tried to chase me.
Yeah.
And then I invented a helicopter and flew away.
Yeah.
So then I'm then with a 5-year-old boy and then he will kind of go, I remember the time you burnt all those people.
So they do, my daughter makes me to have her little brother who's like a baby, basically.
Yes.
Toddler. He's a sort of evil character in every story she loves.
Nice.
So he's always trying to mess things up.
And she always goes, can you have a little Ernie in it as well? And Ernie goes, and then she comes up with worse things than I could ever imagine. But yeah, it's. But you sort of know, it's great. That's an audience where you know whether it's worked or not. You can tell when she's getting bored. And also, the hits come back. So she'll keep reminding you of things that you've done that were good.
Yeah.
4 months ago. But yeah, they're not for public.
So you're essentially like you're like the Stones, and you're trying to write new stuff, and they're like, just do Brown Sugar, Dad. Put on your trousers and do Brown Sugar.
It is.
I think I'm going to be like that. Hopefully, I'm lucky enough and we could have kids. But I think I'll be like critiquing myself. I'll come back and go, it's not gone great, though.
It's very free for you know. But it sort of doesn't matter what you say. You're trying to get them to sleep,
yeah,
really.
But
so
if
you're too good at it, then they stay awake. That's the problem.
But do you ever have moments where you're like, that was a good story?
Yeah.
What is wrong with it? Is it like stand-up? Yes. What's the point of performing in front of a crowd like that?
Yeah.
If you're literally giving it everything, there's magic, there's elves.
I do sometimes tell her, she should appreciate what Plus, it's good. You're getting married very soon.
Yeah, getting married on Thursday.
Thursday?
Yeah.
This is Monday.
This is my last thing. Yeah, it's very exciting. And I'm just putting the finishing touches to my speech.
Right.
And it's all sorted, and my brother is my best man. It's going to be, that'd be interesting. it's going to be really exciting, I hope.
I winged my speech.
Did you?
Yeah. Wasn't a good idea.
What?
I was bad, because also you're a bit drunk by that stage.
Oh, great, I like this already.
But I've told this story a lot, but luckily my dad... Just before I did my speech, my dad, we entered quite a nice hotel for the reception. And they had like little tubs of, what's it called?
Jam?
No, it was...
what was that? Go on.
Lip balm, because he knows the story. Little tubs of lip balm on the table. The little tubs of lip balm on the table.
Yeah. Hang on, you're pissed and your dad's like, don't worry, I've got lip balm.
My mum turned to me and she said to me, your dad's just eating the lip balm. He thought it was cheese. So luckily I had that, so that was the main part of my speech, was just laughing at my dad.
So he thought,
why did they have such tiny amounts of cheese? I mean, why did they have lip balm is another question. But
so, that's all good, but did you mention your wife?
I never think I've got onto her.
Good.
At some point, yeah. Seven. We've been married 7 years. And you've been married 7 years. You can come back. Come back in 7 years'
I will.
Time.
Yeah.
I'll be married 14 years. Or to my second wife for about 3 years.
Imagine that. That's the doorbell of my other house. that's the reason why we got to do two of these. Pay the mortgage. You still working, boy? It's going to be all right, I think.
Yeah.
It's a couple. We've been together for ages.
Yeah, yeah.
Have you ever met my girlfriend?
I don't think I have. I'm not sure she exists.
Reg D. Hunter met her years ago, and my girlfriend said her name, and Reg said, "That's a beautiful name." And my girlfriend explained what it meant in Welsh, because she's Welsh, and it means love. And Reg went, "I knew you were the embodiment of love when I first met you." So I stopped taking her to gigs. It was just like, I can't compete with that, for fuck's sake. Touring with Reg Hunter, wow, that's fun, man.
You'll like being married. It's the same as not being married, except, much worse.
We've learned a lot because my girlfriend wasn't very well. She was in hospital for a bit, which is awful. And, the house fell apart without her. You realise that you love her and you cannot cope. Do you know what I mean? I thought I did a lot of stuff around the house.
No.
Me and the dog, we're like fucking Tom Hanks in Castaway. 2 days into it. Spearing fish with sticks. Yeah, a tuna mayonnaise sandwich. Because it was the only thing we could find. And we were on Skype and the dog's like...
it's not going great here.
Yeah, but it's going to be lovely. It's going to be a lot of fun.
And then we're going on a dad. If you become a dad, that'll be a great thing.
Oh, yeah, hopefully. I find it very nerve-wracking.
You should.
But hopefully it's 95% her and 5% me, because there's too much madness in me. I don't want to put my brain into a child's. Do you know what I mean? I think that would be a lot. Because as a job, this is just absurd. that, you know, I have to have strangers like me. Fucking hell.
Yeah.
Imagine a
but
kid.
But that is sort of what that. Being a kid... I mean, the problem is comedians are kids, and that's sort of what is being a kid is like, really. You sort of think... I look at my daughter and think, oh, she'll be a comedian, but she's just being a kid, so she likes jokes and she likes showing off.
Yeah.
And you think, oh, she's going to be a comedian. That's maybe bad. But you know, she's just being a kid.
Yeah.
And we're just being kids, and that's the reason that, you know, it can... It's all right.
Is it all right?
Yeah.
Good.
It's really good.
That's your tip. Good.
It's really good. They don't sleep very much, as I was saying to you backstage.
Yeah.
And so, like, I got to sleep till 6:30 today, and I'm delighted by that.
Yeah.
Delighted.
I'm not too.
Can't tell you how happy I am. My son slept 2 days in a row. He slept till 6:30.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. 6:45 it was yesterday. It's insane.
And you get up early before them as well.
I do, well, because I'm an old man. I have to do a wee. And I have to decide whether it's worth going back to sleep. It's where do you work for... Don't mess around with
it. I was just fucking up.
It's ruining everything.
Flash.
Don't bring that film up.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
You were played for Basingstoke Town, and you know in Basingstoke,
yeah,
there is a park called the Russell Howard Park. Do you know that?
I do. Known locally as Dog Shit Canyon.
Is it named after you, Russell Howard?
It isn't. It's I don't know. It's named after somebody else. But there's lots of dog poo there. And I once saw a man. We were playing. I was like 14. I was playing for Alton United, and we were like, can't play. There's a dog shit. And this bloke went, no, it's not. And he threw it away.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's kind of standard. That's what happens in football.
He was a mayor of Basingstoke. Russell Howard. Russell something Howard. Do you know there's a Russell Howard Pavilion in South Ham?
Nope. Where's South Ham?
£12 an hour you can hire it for.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
South Ham. It's not bad.
It's good.
How big is it?
It says you can hire Russell Howard for £12 an hour. I reckon they're using that as a little...
Yeah?
Get people in and go, ooh, and then, oh, it's a hall. Oh, well.
It's a hall.
Well, it's like a
pavilion.
Oh, right,
phew, Jesus.
Look out for it.
Are there any places that that you're on? Is there a Richard Herring hut?
No. Well, now on Wikipedia, there's finally that thing where it says, if you want the other Richard Herring, click here. There's a Richard J. Herring.
What does
I'm Richard K. Herring. There's an economist in America called Richard J. Herring.
Nice. There's a musician called Russell Howard.
Is there?
Yeah.
It's got to be quite a common name, I guess.
Yeah.
Howard's quite a common name.
Howard, too, yeah.
Catherine Howard from off of
Henry VIII's
yep. cock.
Yep.
And was she the one who survived Catherine Howard, or was she...
She was off.
No,
she was off. Like the film that. No! The she first heckle of the evening, five. I will not see Catherine Howard.
Divorced, beheaded, died, divorced. Beheaded? Was she beheaded, Catherine Howard? Yeah.
Yeah. And then he put her on a wheel. And just went like that.
Frankie Howard?
Yep.
I've guessed the name people called
Spelt
Howard.
Spelt differently. It was an E, wasn't it?
Well. Sport of fun. I was gonna name loads. Howard from Take That?
Yep.
Howard from the Halifax advert.
We're back to the bus stop, aren't we? That would be a very good podcast for you, because you don't do enough.
Yeah.
bus stop natter.
I mean, it basically is. It's basically stone clearing. That's what that is. It's just without the bus. And with lots of stones in it. You should listen to it. It's good.
What's stone clearing?
Oh, so, you want to...
See, I don't know my way around the murky world of podcasts, but I said stone clearing, and a sizable amount of people got very excited.
No, I think that was like trepidation about talking about it. It's where I go around the local field and I'm trying to clear all the stones off the field that I did walk my dog round.
Hang on a minute, what? And you've been recording this?
Yeah.
Why?
Because it's some people will be interested. Because it's an artistic project.
Is it?
Yeah.
Well, hang on. So
about man's, you know, insignificance. It's me versus nature. I play myself at snooker. That's the internal struggle between a man and himself.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And we all have to struggle.
Yeah, we can all write a PR blurb, but, like, are you all right? Give me a call.
It's about mental breakdown.
You fucking mad bastard. They're in stones and recording it. You got children, huh? You fucking... One, two, three. Press play and record. Now, good luck to you. Whatever you want to do, you fucking mad.
You went to Bedford Modern School.
I did for 1 year, yeah.
1 year. Bedford was Peter John Squire the head when you went there?
I don't know. Oh. I remember finding it absolutely terrifying. I was 9. We lived in Flitwick at the time. And I had to wear an art smock. And there was indoor shoes, and I had to have a fucking briefcase for like a year, and it was so far removed, like literally, like, you know, sat down and kind of go, "Do you have a good weekend, Howard?"
My father killed a rabbit with a hammer.
So I never felt less connected, and I got bullied every day by a bloke who used to call me Vacuum Head. Every day, I didn't really look like a vacuum. But he's like, "All right, Vacuum Head," and he used to spit on me. It was horrible. It was proper weird. And you had, like, indoor shoes and there was always the threat of being, like, you know, fucked. So, do you know what I mean? There's all these kind of horrible, "Oh, I'm going to fuck you" in the shower. I said, "Oh, Christ."
Yeah.
Then I went to a village school where there was bell ringing. So it was a bit of a change of pace.
Yeah.
So we welcome you to Ropley School. We hope you will enjoy your stay. I was like, excellent, no one's going to try and bum me in the shower, is it? If I play my cards right, I might get wanked off in a couple of years. Yeah, it was weird. It was a very weird...
Why is it called Bedford Modern School? Was there a school in Bedford that wasn't very modern?
There was Bedford School, and then there was Bedford Modern. We had, like, sort of a red thing. We had, like, caps. It was proper weird, man. Did you go to private school?
No, I went to comprehensive schools like a normal person.
Yeah, totally. But that was it. But for whatever reason, it was like... A bit like, you know, 7-Up, that thing where, which is amazing. Is everyone watching that? It's just great, isn't it? It was almost like my dad went, right, let's see if we can put him in private school for a year and see what that does. And then, obviously, couldn't afford it. And I was like, it's not for me.
No.
And then I went back to, you know, normality. It was weird, though.
Yeah.
Very, very strange.
Yeah,
it's... It was too adult that suddenly, like, there was a thing called a disorder mark if you behaved irregularly. And we had to read the... Lord's Prayer, and it was like there were still sort of hints of the cane and all that kind of stuff. And I remember once, like, I had to do this exam to get in, and I kind of passed it. Right at the end, this teacher kind of went, I put in that little maths trick at the end just so you could enjoy it all. Did you enjoy that? And all the other boys were like, "Oh, yeah, I really enjoyed it." and I had just looked at that going, But yeah, it was we weren't allowed to wear pants when we played football. That was the kind of place it was. And this old teacher used to go around checking whether you're wearing pants or not. And he'd kind of go, "Oh, well, that's just what they did." Like, age 9, went, "You're wearing pants?" "Yeah, because it's freezing outside, you fucking paedophile." But, yeah.
So not a happy time. I'm sorry for bringing it up.
No, it's fine. But, like, I often wonder what would have happened if I'd have... You know, stayed there. Thank God I didn't.
But it's an odd thing. I mean, I know
it's age 9 to suddenly. Yeah. I think if you're sort of if you have families that are, that's what happens and that's where you go and I'll see you in the summer.
Yeah.
But my family were very kind of.
Were you boarding there as well, or were you?
No. I used to just go there.
Yeah.
And so I used to get, I'd get chased by the kids who went to normal school on the way there, and then get a bus and then fucking leg it back carrying a briefcase through town. Tough. I remember once getting chased by a cat, and I was like, "Even fucking animals, like, fuck off, Jesus!"
So, yeah, it was weird. And then I was so pleased when I went to, like, we moved to Ropley and I sort of went there. And, yeah, it's odd. It's very, but I guess if I'd have done that, I'd have just been a different person.
Yeah, definitely. Well, you know,
we weren't even allowed to play football at school. That was right. What, so it was just one of those, rugby only. And I was like, God, my brain is in my foot. I need to be able to play football. I don't have academic skills.
But, well, it's sort of, you know, you could be the Tory leader if you'd gone to public school.
True.
Like, I went to university with a lot of public school people.
Yes. And how was that?
Well, I find it very intimidating. And it wasn't until afterwards I realised, well, A, you realise a lot of it's just that confidence that's been bred into them. So you don't have that in comprehensive school. You're not told that everything you do is brilliant. And you're not taught to lead or whatever. You know?
Yeah.
And I went to a very nice comprehensive school, but it's still, you know, it wasn't... And I felt like...
But did you feel... Because it's that interesting thing, because a lot of people who go to private school are just, you know... Then you know, obviously they're not all dicks. That's a massive generalisation, but they have that kind of confidence.
Yeah.
And as a generalisation of comprehensive kids, we all have that chippy fucking
yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It was this weird thing that whenever all the people that I know that went to private school, so balanced, and you meet them at uni and they're wearing blue shirts and chinos, and they're like, "Hey man, how are you?" And they're lovely. And then there's this weird comprehensive voice in your head going, "Yeah, but you spunk on biscuits." Like, that's always what it comes down to. Yeah, but like they ever did. Like, that clearly never happened, and yet everyone in comprehensive schools, "Yeah, but you know what they do with biscuits? This week, don't have to eat biscuits with jizz on." But, you know.
I kind of feel sorry. I feel sorry for them, because I think it's a weird, you know, it's weird to have your childhood taken away in that way.
Totally.
And B, I think it's, you know, you're judged for a choice that your parents made. You know,
absolutely. Well,
and for the rest of your life, you know. And I get it a little bit, because I went to Oxford, and so people still have that thing where they're going, "Oh, so," and you go, "Well, you know, I just got some good A-level results."
Exactly.
But, you know, that's, you still get that in reverse snobbery. Mm. And it's, you know, it is odd to not let your kids be kids, or to put them through all that.
But then there's a gig at the Uppingham School that you've probably done as well.
I think I have, yeah.
And it's this amazing... It's in Lincoln. I think Stephen Fry went there. And you do a gig there. It's amazing. And I remember looking at the notice board about, like, the school trips. And they were always amazing, like, ski trips and stuff like that. And you think, God, wow, what a life to give your child.
Yeah.
So that's the funny thing, isn't it? The older you get, you kind of go, oh, God, who...
Yeah, but also, if you'd paid all that money to send someone to school, you'd be upset if they didn't get a fantastic job at the end of it and
get
into the brilliant
university.
Well, that's why I
often think about Prince Charles. You think of the money spent on Prince Harry's education, and he got an E in art and a D in geography. You'd be like, my dad would have kicked the fuck out. I only had 1 year private school.
Hey, let's ask you some emergency questions. What am I thinking, asking you about your childhood?
You got very scruffy handwriting.
Yeah. I'm using a sort of biro there as well, so it's not. I'm not good with a biro. What?
Is this one of your books? One of your many books?
One of my many books. What's the most expensive thing you've had eaten by a pet, other than a tuna sandwich?
My mum's dog Bert ate a whole plate of sausages once.
Right.
And I think they were butcher's sausages.
Right. And that's what dogs are meant to do, right? That's the run down the street with a string of sausages.
He
in their
did,
mouth.
But he wolfed them down, but he was an amazing, amazing dog. He once jumped out of a car, traveling at 20 miles an hour, like some sort of 70s detective. And he looked at my dad, right? He looked at
dad like that, as if to kind of go, "You know what I'm going to do." Don't
you? And dad was like that, can't you know that? And he just like that. And mum was like that, and he was perfectly fine.
Yeah, my son was doing that. Like yesterday, I was pushing him around in a party in the garden in a little toy car with a little door. As I was pushing him along, he'd open the door and get out. It was very similar. Very similar. This is a good question. I don't think I've ever asked anyone this question before.
Okay.
Question C636, if you're following along at home. This book's available in the foyer after the show. If an older version of you came back from the future and gave you advice about what you should do with your life, would you take the advice or assume that the you from the future was evil and trying to screw you over?
Excellent question.
Thank you.
Do you know the weirdest thing about that is I've got a
10-minute bit of stand-up about that in my next show. So I've got like a really brilliant bit, but then I won't be able to do it on tour.
No, don't.
So
do
what
it.
I'm going to need you to do is ask me another question.
Okay. I am the you from the future giving you the idea to do that routine. That's what's happening. And I'm trying to screw you up because it's a bad routine. The thing is, if you come back from the future...
Oh, do you want to answer it?
No, I'm going to tell you. I'll answer it and see. You can use this if you want.
All right.
I don't know what it's going to be yet.
I'll be 15-year-old me. Okay. You be Richard Herring from now.
Okay. Thing is, if it is you from the future coming back trying to give you advice to do what would be better for you, that means the you from the future won't exist anymore. So, because you'll take a different path. So the you from the future coming back will cease to exist. So it can't be in their interest to come back and give you that advice. So they must be giving you that advice because you were going to do something different that would mean that they weren't going to exist. So they're tricking you. That's the answer.
There you go.
Thank you. It's all random.
You've always been obsessed with time travel, haven't you?
Yeah.
I remember when we first met, you always used to go on about Good Night, Sweetheart.
Yeah. Still do.
Do you still do? But you knew the name of him and everything.
Yeah.
What's his name?
Gary Sparrow.
That's it, yeah.
I'm writing a sitcom with...
I used to love that. It's such a brilliant observation. Yeah. But, yeah, why did he go back to that place? So I was probably there when you started it. She's still knocking that around. Fucking lunatic, man.
In my sitcom, the main character's called Phoebe Pigeon, but Phoebe was the name of Gary's, and her boyfriend's called Gary, and she's called Phoebe. It's just the other way around. Good night, sweetheart. Look out for that when that never happens.
Or maybe spend a bit more time writing it and a bit less time picking up pebbles.
You'll all see. You'll be laughing on the other side of your face when I have a wall that's named after me. No one will remember your stupid fucking routine about time travel then.
Herring's wall, nice.
Oh, I had some written in the back here. Let me see. I'll do some of that.
I'm going to ask you one from here and all.
You can.
Are you able to explain what differentiates a satsuma from a clementine or a mandarin?
No, I'm not. That's why I asked the question. Some of them... there was a news story today about a man who, on a flight from Pakistan, who was looking for the toilet and opened the emergency door. Luckily, when the plane was on the ground.
Yep.
But it still meant the emergency slides came out and they had to delay the flight by 5 hours. That's quite a big mistake to make, isn't it? I mean, you can never have flown in a plane before and also go, whoa, I wonder why they're making the toilet so hard to get into.
Yeah. And also, there's a lot of flight attendants, so presumably they saw him doing that. And why did they not do it?
Wait, let's see how this plane
goes. Exactly. Just, like, holding on to stuff like that. I've heard tell of this.
So, what is the most unlikely thing you've ever mistaken for a toilet? Is it a shower in the gym?
No.
That's for me.
I don't know.
No. It's not always. This is a question that came from the John Ronson interview, which you probably know about this about John Ronson, that one of his last podcasts was about tailor-made porn, where people who can't get the porn they want on the internet, unbelievably, pay people to make...
Yes.
The porn that turns them on.
Yeah.
What's that for you? If you're going to have some porn, you're going to have some porn made for you that isn't currently available. What would it involve?
Do you know? I would love to watch quite a lot of my friends make love.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know. I just my friend Will Hodgson. You'll know.
Will. Yeah.
Yeah. I'd love to watch.
You want to watch Will make love?
Yeah. I just think the things he'd say would be hilarious. Would you go, all right, man, I'll fucking have you. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it would be good.
It's very specific, but that's why it's tailor-made.
Would he have to not know you were watching? So you'd...
Yeah.
Because that would put off saying the stuff.
Yeah, if I was stood there in the corner, like, you know...
So...
Eating popcorn, going, just do your thing.
So for the porn to work, Will Hodgson would have to be secretly filmed... making love with his wife.
Yes, yeah.
And then, I mean,
I wouldn't need the visuals.
Okay, just
the audio would work.
Yeah. The audio recording.
Just, oh, fucking hell, but there's something about him specifically. Oh, fucking hell, man. not really.
Did you see?
I was me joking. I'm not really. I don't know what my. What's your. It's a weird thing to talk about.
By ventriloquist dummies.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's very little of that online.
Yeah. That's why none of the dolls speak.
Did you see Black Mirror, where
there's a, in the new series, spoiler alert, people at home, it's happened a long time ago, you've had time to watch it. They have a video game where you can sort of, you become sort of part of the character, you can feel like you're the character in the game.
Right.
And there's sort of fighting characters, it's like those old fighting games where the two characters fighting against each other.
Yeah.
And then they're two mates playing in different places, but then they start kissing, the characters start kissing, and then they start fucking, one of them's a woman in the game, and they start fucking, and then they regularly keep having sex with each other. Do you think that should be considered cheating on your partner, or do you think that should be allowed? Because I watched it with my wife, and she thought that that was cheating.
I love stuff like that. There was... I don't know. And it's a very similar question. There was a man... I don't know his actual name. He's one of my uncle's mates. He's called Cuddly Bob.
Right.
And he likes cuddling people. He's lovely. Yeah, that makes him sound creepy, but he's like... and he's like, here's a question for you, right? That, like, all my uncle's mates are always like... They've got these wild-eyed, like, proper, like, homemade cider, and it's like, fuck, I have three more of them and kill you, not know I've done it? Like, kind of guys. And he was sort of saying, if I travel back in time and I have sex with my wife, have I cheated on my wife now? Because I've had sex more times than her here,
yeah.
But I've traveled there. But I am cheating because it's her, isn't it? Like that, and it's like a firework party.
Yeah.
And so I don't know.
No. I don't think it is. It's not cheap. I wanted to have... If we were playing a video game together and we weren't even in the same room...
Yep.
And then, you know, we just started kissing in the game...
Yep.
And could feel it all and everything.
Yeah. Oh, right. Having, okay.
We like we were kissing and having sex.
You're like, geez, yeah, FIFA's changed, isn't it? Ronaldo's in me.
That's not... But we're not actually... It's only a sort of... It's like having a... elaborate wank, isn't it? It's the same as the robot that my wife won't let me have sex with as well.
Yeah.
My wife's vow, that's the thing. You have time to get this in your marriage vows. Go, I promise...
I promise...
I won't have sex with anyone else unless they're a sex robot.
Yeah.
That doesn't count. Or if it's one of my mates and we're playing a video game and then we just start fucking in the video game. That's obviously not really us, so that's fine. A couple of people leaving due to the offence... The offence cause, but I think they
looks like somebody's dragging a sex doll. Away.
Darling, I'm not letting him have to speak about you like this.
You can only assume that couple, the husband, has had sex with one of his friends in a video game. That's the only reason they thought we're going to go out. We're going to try and forget about this incident. Go and see some comedy. Ah, they brought that up. They brought the one thing we were trying to get away from.
There was, I know that there's a company in the UK. Cause we spoke about this on the TV that they have made a sex robot.
Tell me more.
And they've given it a Scottish accent to make it sound more desirable. And, you know, I mean, French, Spanish, Italian, not Scottish, surely. Fucking doomy. Right. Absolutely not R2. Oh, God, imagine if that becomes a thing. People are doing it. Yuck.
Be great.
Do you think? I think we're talking instant regret. I think you're giving it the big I am. I think one thrust in, you'd be weeping all over your new contraption. Now, that's a podcast. Robot seduction. Hello, welcome to Robot Seduction with me, Richard Herring.
I would definitely have to podcast
it. What kind of dance moves are they?
Oh, you like them, baby. For the listeners, I'm dancing really erotically in front of the robot.
Are those pebbles in your fucking trousers?
How would you seduce a robot?
Don't have to, that's the beauty of it.
But would you really?
Yeah.
Imagine...
Just come in. Right, I'm home.
Oh, God. Something about you rubbing your hands together. Fucking Ginster's pasty in your mouth. Yeah. Right, give me that WD-40. I'm going to go upstairs and going to leather fucking hell. What if it, like... Have you ever seen Wallace and Gromit, The Wrong Trousers? Like, what?
No, not that version.
But what if it marched you out in the street? Do you know what I mean? Just like, look what he's got me doing. Just you're kind of hanging off it. Nah. No, not for me, Richard.
No, okay.
No.
And that's a no to the wanking off, the having sex in the...
No, I wouldn't even have sex with you if you're covered in tinfoil. But that's mostly for lightning fear.
Yeah. Stick it in the marriage vows, that's all I'm saying. Just to cover, just cover yourself. What? In the marriage vows, just go...
Jesus, I thought that was like a robot metaphor or something like that. Stick it in the marriage vows. Does that mean robot anal? What a pig you are, but a lovable pig.
Thank you. I wouldn't...
Would anyone else have sex with a robot?
Yeah, all of them would. Now, this is the worst possible audience you could have asked that question to.
Obviously, the women do, but, you know...
These guys are just waiting until the robots are here. That's the only reason they're here. And then once the robots are here, bang, we'll never see
them
again.
The women have been having sex with robots for years.
They have, yeah.
They just snapped the finger off. They do, just left the rest of it in the shed.
Oh, yeah.
I'll be back for more when I need it.
Oh, I was going to ask you this about your TV show.
Hit me, sugar.
I should have asked you right at the beginning. Yeah. You know you've got those chairs that are like newspapers?
Yeah.
That's like loads
of yours?
I want them. Just often you're talking about something, getting something quite serious.
Yeah.
And then you cut back and then you're all sitting on chairs made out of newspapers. And it seems too frivolous. Does it ever become awkward when you're sitting there going, oh, why are we talking about this serious thing sitting on some newspapers?
Well, I think it's a bit like sort of like Michael Gondry. Do you know what I mean? It's like that. It's just so lo-fi and so interesting and just got to keep it the same. Do you know what I mean? We tried other chairs. It just wasn't the right vibe.
Are they comfortable, those
newspapers? Yeah, really,
are there any real newspapers on there, or is it just all pretend?
Or is it
all real?
They're all real newspapers, but on the front of every cover, fake news has been written so that you don't show actual news stories.
Okay.
Because somebody would write in and say, oh, like, he's talking about this, and yet there's a story about whatever.
Yeah. Weird.
So it's just... Yeah. They're really comfy.
Nice.
But yeah, everyone talks about them. That's the only thing.
I think they're distracting. Sometimes I'm deep into an interview and it cuts back. Are they in those stupid chairs? get some normal chairs.
Yeah.
And I'm taken away from the interview by the chairs.
Sure.
So, you know, you're being upstaged by a chair. That doesn't happen in my podcast. I'm just telling you. If you take over this podcast, don't bring your fucking chairs. That's the one condition.
No, I respect that, Willie.
Thank you. If I'd been in the writer's room for more than 4 weeks, those chairs would never have gotten to town.
I mean, we had them for the 4 weeks you were there. And you said nothing. You just sat in the corner eating Haribo. Banging on about, come on, seriously, do you know what I mean? I mean, they look like women. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, dear. Right.
I'm not on about C-3PO. I'm on about, like, can't tell. That's how Richard normally talks. He's like that.
Yes, that's me. That's me.
Looking at robots going, ooh.
Right, we're going to go... I have to say, the last time I saw you, and that's why I felt like I'd seen you more recently than that, because it doesn't feel like 7 years since we did this. It's insane. I saw you at a Scope gig last year.
Yeah.
Which was... You're absolutely excellent at that, but what I really liked about it, and this doesn't very often happen at any gigs, but especially charity gigs, is you turned up right at the beginning, even though you were going to be on it right at the end, and you watched everybody's act, and you were really terrific with all the younger comedians. And
I really love stand-up. That's the thing.
Yeah,
I find it so. But then you were the same when you came back. But no, but you didn't just rock up and do it.
No.
Just, I love. There's a guy called Jamali Maddox who I think is brilliant. There's a girl called Rosie Jones who I think is great, and you know, loads of others. I just find it like, I tell you, he's incredible. God, he's funny. What's his name? John Cairns.
Oh, yes.
Is the comedian I saw. And I watched his show twice in Edinburgh. And I absolutely loved it. What I loved about it was so left field. It was so deft. Every joke was just small and precise. But he was trying so hard to make anyone in front of him laugh. Whereas I feel sometimes like with more left field stuff, there's that kind of, you know, sort of trust fund comic where like, oh, I'm not good enough for you, is it? Whereas, you know, a lot of comics, the gigs have to work, otherwise you haven't got any money. So you sort of respect people and crowds. Always find that thing, oh, yeah, do you not get that? Fair enough. There's a lot of that really winds me up. But he was so left field, but trying so hard to make anyone in front of him laugh. I just fucking loved it.
Yeah.
Also, nobody else could make it funny like he has. He's just got that, that ability, you know, just from the... And I'd never seen him. And he just walked on stage and he was going, how much? Pointing at his shoes, how much? And somebody go, I don't know, 60 quid. He went, £12 off. And then he was sort of fiddling with the mic for literally about five minutes. And then he eventually went, tense, innit? Tense! I love him. If you get the chance, honestly. But so that's why I've started going to Edinburgh again. Because for years I was afraid, and I thought everyone would, would not want me there, and I would feel like all kind of mainstream and awkward. And God, I'm not good enough. And then two things happen. You realise, wow, loads of people are shit, and like really shit. And there's loads of brilliant people, and you realise where you fit in, and you get to hang out with and people I think like you or people like Maxwell or, you know, Andy Zaltzman or whoever. And it's great. And you go, God, why did I impose this upon myself?
You know, I think it's good to stay interested in comedy. I think that's the thing. If you lose your interest in other comedians and in comedy itself, it's what you were saying at the beginning. You won't be as good a comedian yourself if you're not interested in what you're doing.
I love it.
Engage what you're doing. But also, I think it's so important to stay interested in what other people are doing as well. And, and then not be threatened by it. Because not a threat. You know, it's not a threat.
It's really, there's an amazing documentary about Gary Shandling. That is exactly that. That it's like, don't be afraid of anybody coming up, because they just help them. And honestly, I really love chatting with like new comics and like having like. So our writers' room has expanded and people have come in. Kiri Pritchard-McLean now writes on the show. She's amazing, really funny, and sort of views the world in a completely different way to me. And there's loads of young men and women that work on my show, and you just realise that they are. You need those people. Mm-hmm. You just, otherwise, you're just this kind of like bitter old, no, don't need that. Better my way. Do it this. So it's really, you can have your world realigned by people rather than, just not wanting to engage with them.
Yeah, and you've always been honest as well, which some comedians aren't, about using other writers on your shows, because obviously I think you couldn't do your show as a solo thing anyway. It would be impossible. And but, you've always given the credit to the writers as well, which I think is amazing, because I think, they're often program associates.
Well, this is the thing.
And no one knows their writers and,
Well, the reason on every other show, except for mine, they're called program associates, which means that you don't have to pay them the correct amount. Whereas if they're writers, they have to be paid more. So that's why they're called program associates. But program associate always means writer. And also, the first time I did the one show years ago with Adrian Charles, and he said, do you do all this on your own, do you? And I don't know why, I was all nervous. And I went, I do, yes. And the guys were in a room. And I kind of came back the next day and I apologised. And I was like, I'm a fucking piece of shit. I'll never do that again. So I always mentioned Steve Williams and Dan Atkinson, Carl Minns, where he worked on the show, and Kiri. Because it was that thing of, like, to save my fucking ego, I sold the people that write the show with me. And it just disgusted me. So I kind of, since then, I've always done it. So, yeah. That's why I do it. Because I couldn't do the show without them. Like, Steve Williams has been there from day one and is just amazing. And that's why Steve Hall, who I also write a show with, and Steve Williams support me on tour. And it's great. So I get to see my mates do arenas, and I kind of really get off on that. Not as much as if I was watching Will Clark. But kind of enough.
Yeah. Really. That's good.
I've really enjoyed this, man.
Good. It's lovely to have you back.
It's flowed everywhere.
Yeah. In a way, that's
what we've done too long.
We've done just about a little bit too long, but enough.
That's all right, isn't it?
So, yeah, we've done right. There's a clock here. They don't have that at the Leicester Square Theatre, do you? Clock.
I mean, is that where you left?
Yeah. I'm going back in the autumn. I'm just doing a tour. It's lovely. Look, it's so lovely to have you. Come back in 7 years' time. Let me know how your marriage is going. And
that's how football is shot.
Yeah.
You go like that, and then you go like that. Ooh. Oh, sorry. You're right.
Ladies and gentlemen, Russell Howard! We'll be back for next week's show. Thank you.
How'd you like them sky potatoes?
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen,
premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy-ad-free. That's amazon.com/comedy-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Thanks for listening. Go to GoFasterStripe.com for all your Rich Herring download and book needs. Go to richherring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can and make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too. Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen, though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.